KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond.
Outer Sunset.
Hey, I'm from Foster City.
I'm from Pleasant Chill.
Alameda.
I'm from Hercules.
Coming up, we'll hear about all the bills the California Assembly passed to protect immigrants and one that didn't.
I think at the core, people want major and lasting immigration policy reform.
Then what SF Music Day means to local performer Destiny Muhammad.
But I'm excited about is that this festival really is designed with us in mind.
And how music brings comfort and healing to people nearing the end of life.
He was elated. He was so happy. It's the work of angels. I wish there was more of it.
Seeking comfort today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. First up, we'll start with KALW News Director Ben Trefney joining me with a top story in the Bay Area.
Hannah, today there is a lot about litigation. San Francisco is suing five of the world's largest oil and gas companies for the costs of seawalls and other infrastructure it says it needs to protect against climate change. The lawsuit was filed today in a California court, and it accuses the companies of ignoring warnings that fossil fuels would cause catastrophic global warming and that those companies are mounting campaigns to discredit climate change science. The lawsuit says companies have created a public nuisance. Also, the city of Oakland filed a separate and similar suit. The five companies now include Chevron, ExxonMobil, and ConocoPhillips. Chevron, which is based in San Ramon, said in a statement that it welcomes serious attempts to address climate change, but these suits do not do that. ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips did not immediately comment. The American Petroleum Institute said in a statement that the industry continues to actively address climate change. At least two other California counties and one city have filed similar suits. We've reported on that, Hannah. You can find it at www.kalw.org. Click Cross Currents.
That's KALW's news director, Ben Trefney. There's been a flurry of action around immigration, both nationally and statewide, in the past weeks. Just today, State Attorney General Javier Becerra filed a lawsuit against the Trump administration over the proposed border wall with Mexico, saying construction would violate both state and federal law, as well as damage the environment. Meanwhile, on the last day of the legislative session in Sacramento, the California Assembly passed a number of immigration-related bills. These and hundreds of others are now headed to Governor Brown's desk. They're part of a set that Democrats introduced to demonstrate their resistance to Donald Trump. Many aim to protect undocumented California residents. Maybe the most closely watched is Senate Bill 54, more commonly known as the Sanctuary State Bill. Here to tell me more is KALW's immigration reporter Nina Gensler-Debs. So let's start with that Sanctuary State Bill, SB 54. What is it about?
So SB 54 was introduced by State Senate President Kevin DeLeon. And basically, this bill tries to restrict the ways that state and federal officials can cooperate with federal immigration enforcement, or ICE. Mm-hmm. That means designating schools and courthouses as safe zones for undocumented immigrants, preventing local officers from asking about someone's immigration status, and prohibiting police from being used as immigration enforcers. Mm-hmm. But the bill that actually passed is kind of a scaled-down version of what DeLeon initially proposed. Now it's amended with input from Governor Brown so that federal agents can still enter county jails to question immigrants. And it allows police to share information about undocumented people if they've committed certain violent or other serious crimes.
So who was against the bill?
Well, one of the biggest opponents was the California Sheriff's Association. They claim that limiting how local law enforcement communicates with federal authorities puts public safety in jeopardy. Mm. Republican lawmakers say it sends a message that it's okay to enter California illegally. And, of course, it's unlikely that President Trump will be a fan of this vote.
Right. And he's threatened to cut off funding to sanctuary cities before. Might that happen for the state?
Yeah, well, this bill is directly in opposition to President Trump's actions and his rhetoric. Attorney General Sessions wanted to withhold Justice Department grants to sanctuary cities. Mm-hmm. So San Francisco, California, and other municipalities sued. Just hours before the assembly passed these bills, a federal judge in Chicago blocked the administration from withholding those grants as a way to discourage sanctuary city policies there. Mm-hmm. But the Department of Justice is appealing, so it looks like this will end up in a long legal battle. Mm-hmm. And the Trump administration could very well try to restrict other pots of federal money from flowing to cities or states that try to oppose his immigration agenda.
So what were some of the other bills that the assembly considered?
So here are the ones that passed. SB 31 would prevent state agencies from sharing information that could be used to put together a national registry based on country of origin, ethnicity, or religion. This was directly in response to a potential, quote, Muslim ban.
Mm-hmm.
SB 29 would prevent local governments from doing new deals with corporations that run detention centers. And two assembly bills introduced by San Francisco's own David Chu passed. AB 291 would prevent landlords from revealing a tenant's immigration status to authorities. And AB 450 would require employers to ask ICE for a warrant before a workplace raid, and also to tell their employees that there is an upcoming ICE action.
So that's a lot. Any that didn't pass?
So SB 30 was a bill introduced by Senator Ricardo Lara of Long Beach and Bell Gardens. It would have prevented the state from engaging in any kind of business with contractors who were involved in the proposed border wall with Mexico, specifically on the California border. That did not pass.
Mm-hmm.
So Governor Brown has until October 15th to sign or veto bills that did pass. And since he was pretty heavily involved with SB 54, the sanctuary state bill, it's very likely he'll sign off on that one. And he's also expressed support for funding for legal assistance for DACA recipients.
So obviously, there's a lot of tension between Republicans and Democrats when it comes to immigration policy. But it doesn't stop there, right? Tell me about Nancy Pelosi's press conference on Monday.
Young undocumented protesters basically chanted her down at her own press conference in San Francisco, and she left. There's a lot of frustration from the progressive left with Democratic politicians who haven't been able to deliver the immigration reforms that they've been hoping for. Last week, House Minority Leader Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer had dinner with Trump at the White House to negotiate a deal to protect Dreamers.
Mm-hmm.
Pelosi said that the conversation included the possibility of more border security. That, plus the fact that she was even willing to sit down with Trump in the first place, really upset a lot of undocumented immigrants. So when Nancy Pelosi had this press conference on Monday to talk about Saving the Dream Act, a group of undocumented youth took it over with call and response chants, saying things like, we will not be bargaining chips for Trump, and all of us or none of us. Here's some tape from a San Francisco Chronicle reporter who was there.
3 million people!
3 million people!
All of us!
All of us!
So, Nina, what are protesters like this hoping for?
Well, I think at the core, people want major and lasting immigration policy reform. DACA, for example, is only a temporary relief from deportation and a work-study permit, not a permanent solution. When I've talked to people, they express frustration at what they see as a band-aid solution to a broken system. I've also been told that people are frustrated with dialogue about Dreamers that can create this, quote, good immigrant, bad immigrant dichotomy.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that only deserving immigrants like Dreamers, people who may not have come here by choice, who have spotless criminal records, who are doing well in school, are better and more worthy of being here than other undocumented immigrants who are working maybe more blue-collar jobs that keep the economy running, or even have a drug charge or something on their record, and don't in some way fit this idea of a model immigrant. So when you hear protesters chant, all of us or none of us, that's the kind of thing they're talking about.
Okay. Thanks, Nina.
Thanks, Nina.
That's KALW's immigration reporter, Nina Gensler-Debs. You can reach her at immigration@KALW.org. This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. When SF Music Day first started, it was called Chamber Music Day. While the name has changed over the years, the heart of the one-day festival hasn't. For 10 years now, the nonprofit Intermusic has organized a day-long showcase of all genres of music in the Bay Area, from jazz and classical to new fusions, and it's all free of charge to audiences. This year, the festival will be at the San Francisco War Memorial Building on Sunday, September 24th, Executive Director of Intermusic Corey Combs and classical jazz harpist Destiny Muhammad spoke with KALW's Jen Chien about what you can expect from this year's SF Music Day.
I'll start with you, Corey. You're both classically trained musicians who've spent a lot of your professional lives in jazz and in other types of genres. And tell me how the background of musicians kind of affects the programming of the festival.
In my case, I never really looked at musical boundaries as a guidepost. I played all types of music, classical, jazz, Cuban, whatever interested me, I dove right into. And that's what we're really seeing in this festival and in the musicians, that Bay Area is so diverse in its approach to musical blending and styles, that so many different types of music that you might think are disparate come together in such unique ways. So that's really one of the main, I'd say, drivers in who we bring, is like, how are they bringing this music together? Is it a really traditional concept, or are they breaking all the boundaries? And we love both.
Destiny, your music crosses boundaries as well. As you say, you play everything from Celtic to Coltrane, and your actual instrument is something that people don't always relate to jazz.
Absolutely. So I love that concept of Celtic to Coltrane. I initially, when I first started playing, was playing Celtic music, jigs, reels, hornpipes, and got introduced to jazz, if you will, by way of two jazz harpists, Dorothy Ashby and Alice Coltrane. I said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to move in that direction and still keep a foot in the classical world, because I kept hearing the classical music in jazz. I love that sound. Yeah.
And so is this the kind of festival that you feel at home in?
Absolutely. The first time I was invited to play on this festival, I was excited. We were at the San Francisco Conservatory. So, and I was hearing this beautiful immersion of just beautiful quintets playing real straight chamber music, and then like Howard Wiley on the other side just blazing away. And so I love that. This is an excellent festival, and I pray to be back on it again in years to come.
The format of it sounds like you could just walk across the hall, right? Or you're free to, the audience is free to go, come and go as they please from
That's
room
right.
to room.
We are taking over the four performance spaces in the War Memorial and programmed each space to be not genre specific. So you can, as an audience member, can float around this experience and see as much or as little as they would like to of each performing artist. We really want it to be free and flexible.
That feels very different to me than what some people might imagine, like seeing classical music, that it's a more formal affair, that you buy a ticket, you sit down, and you enjoy quietly and still. How do you want your audiences to experience these shows?
Well, I think that by the nature of who we're bringing, these are going to be artists that bring their audiences in, regardless of style. And so, you know, I imagine there will be some folks that are by design coming and going, but I would think that probably most people are picking their schedule and are going to stay through most of it. But the artists are prepped to know that, hey, you might have some people drifting in and out. That's part of the nature of the day.
Don't take it personally. They might be just deciding to hear something else.
Exactly.
And then the musicians also float in and out. We get a chance to hear each other, because sometimes we're blessed to be working so much that we don't get a chance to get out and support each other. So here's an opportunity. We know, oh, I go on at 1:30 to 2. That means that so-and-so is going on. I'm going to go see them as soon as I'm done.
Is there any particular group or ensemble that you're excited about? You personally, either one of you, that you'd want to shout out? Or
everybody's music, because everybody is bringing their best to this. Everyone.
They know their peers are going to be there too. Maybe that makes a difference,
right? That's right.
Yeah.
The extra special audience.
I am excited so much. There is so many music. Maria, who's also a harpist, is going to be playing just before me. So I'm excited to have the opportunity to hear her just before me. Richard Howell and Sudden Changes, ridiculous. Howard Wiley, ridiculous. He's going to be there, I think, with the extra nappy.
There's an incredible piano duo called Zofo, and they just do all, they're doing brand new commissions for this festival, so
nice.
Premiering pieces, and they do four hands on one piano, and I've never seen such virtuosity on, from two pianists at the same time. So that I'm really excited about. I've seen them once before, and they're thrilling.
I agree. And I want to say what I'm excited about is that this festival really is designed with us in mind. It's local musicians.
Yes.
And I really appreciate that it is primarily about the local artists. It is about us.
Do you feel
here.
Like that's rare or just not as much as you would like? Or?
How about that?
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yeah. How about that?
And that's really central to our mission as an organization, that we're a support organization designed to support Bay Area musicians and artists. So that's really why this festival is this way and will stay this way.
That was genre-defying harpist Destiny Muhammad and executive director of Intermusic, Corey Combs. They spoke with KALW's Jen Chien about SF Music Day. You can see Destiny and more than 100 different musicians, from string quartets to Filipino fusion, on September 24th. That's at the War Memorial Veterans Building in San Francisco. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Music at the end of life is an ancient tradition that dates back to the Middle Ages. 11th century Benedictine monks used music as part of their deathbed vigils to bring comfort and healing to those who were dying. Those practices fell out of favor as monasteries disappeared with the coming of the Reformation and the Industrial Age. But today, music at the end of life is making a comeback. KALW's Joanne Marr reports on how many medical institutions are recognizing the benefits of live music played at the bedside.
Hospitals are not the most relaxing places for people nearing the end of life. The ICUs, the lobbies, and hospital rooms are full of glaring bright lights, institutional noises, and tension. In the stressful environment, music can be the great equalizer. The soothing sounds can bring peace and calmness. Music can help diffuse the tension and anxiety felt by patients and their families. Thad Povey has been playing guitar at San Francisco Zen Hospice for the last 4 years. Today, he's getting ready to play for Bruce Davis, a 67-year-old man with incurable brain cancer. Davis looks weak and frail. His brain tumor has grown larger, and the cancer has metastasized. He's lying in bed, barely able to move, surrounded by several friends who are suggesting some of his favorite songs.
What's that?
Have you ever heard of Havana Gila?
Yeah, wait.
Yeah, okay, and if sure. you've ever been to a wedding, yeah. you've heard of Havana.
Povey doesn't know Havana Gila on the guitar, so he starts finger-picking a quiet melody instead. Although Davis is close to death, he's not ready to let go yet. He's in a joyful mood, and he wants to hear something familiar, like the Beach Boys, the Safaris, or Led Zeppelin. Unfortunately, Povey doesn't know any of those songs.
Here you go, blackbird singing in the dead of night.
Davis's face lights up the moment he hears Blackbird. It isn't long before he and his friends are singing along.
You were only waiting for this moment to arrive.
One of his friends, Jan Flato, has known him since kindergarten. They grew up together in Brooklyn.
He was elated. He was so happy. It's the work of angels. And he had a wonderful effect on Brucey. I know when he's happy. And he was singing along, Here Comes the Sun, and Blackbird, and some of your others. I mean, he loved it. I wish, you know, there was more of it. I mean, it would be fantastic.
30 years ago, it was unusual to hear singing or instruments being played in hospitals. With advanced technology on the rise, music seemed to have no place in a clinical setting. But today, more doctors are recognizing that even the most sophisticated medical treatment cannot address all pain and suffering. In the Bay Area, many hospitals and hospices now welcome live music as an integral part of care at the end of life. Since the 1990s, several Bay Area hospitals have invited musicians to play or sing at the bedside. For dying patients, Celtic harps and vocal ensembles are frequently used. Music at the end of life is a form of palliative medicine. The goal is to provide comfort for patients and their families when cure is no longer possible. Portia Diwa is a harp therapist with the California Pacific Medical Center. She says, like any medicine, one size doesn't fit all. The music needs to be tailored to what the patient finds relaxing.
I would experiment a little bit with, like I'm doing now, to see if there's a mode or a chord that the patient might resonate with or that seems to be more peaceful in that space. And once I found what that resonant tone was, then I would choose a song that's in that mode.
Studies have found that music can lower blood pressure and respiration rates for dying patients. Music can increase endorphins, which reduces pain.
I have seen firsthand how people calm down, slow down, and respond.
Patrice Hahn is the executive director of Healing Muses, a nonprofit that provides healing harp music at the bedside.
In the last 20 years, there's been a movement away from the idea that death is the ultimate enemy that must be conquered. We must not die. Well, it is the inevitable outcome. Is there a way to do this with grace and with comfort and with the maximum amount of healing? Yes. Is music part of that? Yes.
Brainwave studies suggest that even non-responsive people in comas and those near death can still hear sounds. Hahn says hearing may be the last sense lost before death.
They seem to be incapable of any kind of response. They're beyond speech. Their eyes aren't working. They can't eat. And yet, I remember playing at the bedside of a woman, a young woman, who had been severely damaged in a car accident, and watching her breathing attune to the music, watching those two things synchronize, and then watching her eyelids start to flutter, and I'm utterly convinced that she was hearing it.
On the water, water, cool, clear water, on the water.
Music can also engage people near the end of life who are afflicted with Alzheimer's or advanced dementia. Judith Kate Friedman uses music to connect with frail elders in assisted living facilities. Friedman co-wrote this song, Out on the Water, with 9 seniors, all with advanced dementia.
Out on the water, cool, clear water.
The famed neurologist Oliver Sacks theorized that music is hardwired into our brains in a way that defies easy explanation. Even when their brains are ravaged by Alzheimer's, dementia, and severe memory loss, many of Sachs's patients could still sing songs from childhood. Friedman says many of the Alzheimer's patients she's worked with can still remember and respond to music, even if their memories are impaired.
Now, I've been with people in their last day of their life where just the touch of the hand, there's a pulse there. There's a rhythm there. There's still a connection there. The ancient part of the life force is still in us, and it has a music to it. The earliest instruments of humanity are the drum and the voice. And the drum is the heartbeat. And that's where it started. And maybe toward the end of life, it goes back to that simplicity.
Come on, come in. Oh, here comes your lunch. Here comes your lunch. Here comes your lunch. All right.
Back at Zen Hospice, it's time for Thad Povey to pack up his guitar and leave. He'll return the following week to play some more for Bruce Davis. Given the rapid progression of his cancer, Davis most likely has 1 or 2 months left to live. As his life winds down, so will the music. Povey expects the songs he'll play in the coming weeks will be quieter, maybe more Beatles, and more atmospheric. Music that will allow Davis to hoist anchor, set sail, and gently move on. For Cross Currents, I'm Joanne Marr.
Joanne's report was produced with the support of a journalism fellowship from New America Media, the Gerontological Society of America, and AARP. You can find more from her series on end-of-life care at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's it for today's show. The Cross Currents team includes Raquel Maria Dillon, Asal Ehsanipour, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Zaina Nusser, Marissa Ortega Welch, Stephen Short, Jackie Sajiko, Andrew Stelzer, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rowlands and Gabe Graben. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.